So thanks for the invitation to this conference. So I will talk about some behavior of the entanglement entropy in the dynamical situation during the process of summarization. So in general, if we consider an isolated quantum many-body system, say in the sufficiently excited state, we always expect it to eventually approach the equilibrium, which we call the summarization. So this is essentially the foundation of quantum statistical physics, and it's also important for many real-life situations, for example, in heavy ion collisions, and also now cold atom physics can manipulate the system to directly actually probe the summarization process. And so entanglement or just the set of observables which motivated by entanglement then provides a very interesting set of observables, then one can try to probe this equilibration process. On the other hand, the equilibration process also provides a dynamical setting to really study the question of how entanglement grow in the generic state. So in this regard, this is closely related to a question which people are often interested, say, in the quantum information context. Say, just give you a Hamiltonian which couple two different subsystems, then what is the maximal rate this Hamiltonian can generate the entanglement between those subsystems. And the equilibration process, if you look at the entanglement entropy in the equilibration process, that also provides a precise setting to talk about this kind of question. And so the framework which I'm going to be used is the one which Tadashi just described, so I will be very quick. So this is holography, which is a D plus one dimensional gravity is mapped to some D dimensional field theory. And the key thing is that the UV near the boundary is mapped to the UV in the field theory site, and when you go to the interior, it's mapped to the IR. And also a very important aspect is that the classical gravity regime is mapped to the strongly coupled and a very large number degrees freedom regime from the field theory point of view. So generically, so in this holographic framework, the summarization for a sufficiently excited state is just mapped to a gravitational collapse of a sufficiently massive object to form a black hole. And just based on general dictionary, any sufficiently excited state from the field theory, from the boundary theory, they can map to some, so the energy from the boundary can roughly be mapped to the energy in the bulk. And then typically, for sufficiently massive object, there will always gravitational collapse. And so this relation, then through gravity, then we can use just the classical gravity in the gravitational collapse geometry to study a large class of strongly coupled systems in this kind of long equilibrium situation. And also, this relation also provides some new perspectives on the puzzling issues of quantum black holes, say, for example, information paradox, etc. And because the, And the gravitational collapse is a universal phenomenon from the gravity side. This is a very general result of general relativity. So that indicates, indeed, our, at least in this context, in the holographic context, our general assumption about quantum statistical physics indeed correct, that the dual boundary system almost always thermalizes when sufficiently excited. So now I will describe my setup to probe this question. So the simplest setup is that we start with say a gapless system, for example, conformal field theory. And then we turn on a source uniformly in space for a very short time interval, say t equal to zero. And we turn on the source uniformly just for simplicity, and so that we don't have to worry about the spatial dependence. So the consequence of this sending on this uniform source is that you generate the initial state, which is homogeneous and isotropic, but with a non-zero energy density. And then this state will evolve and thermalize. And also for simplicity, we will take this delta T to be small. And so the time which you force the system, we take it to be very small. Actually, we will take it to be much smaller than any other time scale of the system. So essentially, we will take this to be zero. So you can imagine the process of forcing to create this initial state to be instant. Okay. And on the gravity side, and this is described by the so-called Vadier geometry, which is the simplest geometry to describe gravitational collapse. So at t equal to zero, so you turn on some source for some operators in your field theory, and what's happening is that this turning on the source in the field theory induces some kind of matter degrees freedom in the gravity side. And then this matter degrees freedom exciting the gravity side will then just fall at the speed of light, collapse to form a black hole. So eventually they will form black hole, the horizon will be formed. And then so in the past is the geometry just described the vacuum, but then in the future, and then it described by a black hole. And if you take this interval delta t to be very small, and then the width of this shell, this matter, to form the black hole is also goes to zero. So you can think of this shell as a infinite thin shell which collapses. Yes? And there's no major, yeah, there's no assumption. You can turn on a generic some operator. Right, yeah. Yeah, for example, you can certainly turn a marginal operator can do it.
But the existence of this null dust,
yeah,
in the bulk,
yes,
says that there's some operators in the field theory that are
dust degree. Right. You say for example, you can turn on some marginal scalar operator. This is one possibility. Some specific
but surely
one.
It's not that general, right? In a more general CFT, there'd be more general matter field.
Sure. Yeah, but the question, even with more complicated solutions, in many situations, I think this is a well-studied object subject in GR. In many situations, still, if this time scale is very small, Vadier is always very good approximation. I'm just saying. Of course, generic gravitational collapse is complicated, and this is an approximation to a class of them.
Yeah, I'm just trying to ask what class.
Yeah. For example, if you have the massive scalar field, there will be, and for others, massive scalar field in certain sense, this can happen. If collapse is very fast, then it's like null matter. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there some issue about the limit order limits with the cutoff? Do you want delta T to be smaller or bigger than one over the cutoff?
No. You want to take delta T to be much larger than your UV cutoff, but much smaller than this local equipment time, this defacing time I'm going to talk about later.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the only requirement.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would say for such a process, the system is in the pure state throughout the evolution. And they start with a pure state, and it's always a pure state. And the final equilibrium configuration is described by this black hole, and the precise black hole geometry specifies your precise final equilibrium state. And so in this setup, essentially, at t equal to zero plus, and you essentially turn on, even though you turn on uniform energy density, but you only excite a very small subset of degrees freedom of the system. And then you excite only a small subset of degrees freedom of the system, and then they will spread out into other degrees freedom, and then that would be corresponding to the thermalization process. And so, say t equal to zero, essentially all equal time observables behave as if in the vacuum. So except for small number of them, which are sensitive to this kind of source, you turn on. And if we don't care about that very small number of observables, and essentially everything behaves like in a vacuum, including the entanglement entropy. And so equilibrium state is described by the black hole, and as usual, is characterized by this kind of microscopic parameters like energy density, temperature, and entropy density, and or if there's a conserved charge, the chemical potential, etc. And the energy is conserved throughout. So there's a non-zero energy density at t equal to zero, and it's a constant throughout. And so one of the most familiar situation is in the case which we have a zero chemical potential, and in the absence of any other matter fields in this equilibrium state from the gravity point of view, and this is described by Schwarzschild black hole. And if you have some kind of say if you have a conserved charge, then your final state can also have a non-zero chemical potential, and then this is described by so-called Reisner-Nordström charge black hole, and just this part becomes the charge black hole geometry. And so we will be interested in understanding the universal behavior of the system. By universal behavior, we mean the behavior which is insensitive to the details of the energy injection at this t equal to zero, and also the behavior which are insensitive to the macroscopic details of this final equilibrium state. And we are So first, let me just say a general expectations. Say if we are interested in the entanglement entropy, and that's the question which have been debated a lot during this question session of the Tadashi. So if you look at the entanglement entropy of any finite region, so we are considered the summarization in the infinite space. So if you consider the entanglement entropy in any finite region, no matter how large this region is, this is always much smaller than the rest. Okay, so the final equilibrium configuration for this region, the entangled entropy, will always saturate at the thermal entangled entropy to leading order in the region size. So if we specify some kind of region size, and then to leading order in this region size, this will always saturate at the thermal value, just because the rest is much, much larger. And similarly, with other non-local observables, such as equal time correlation function, the Wilson loop will also have the similar behavior. And so now I make a very important emphasize a very important point, is that during this kind of equilibration process, the system should locally equilibrate at first. Okay, so that means at the local locally should be able to there exists certain time scale which I call LEQ, and which is often called the defacing scale, I think, in the condensed matter. There is this local equilibration scale, so after which you should be able to apply the thermodynamics or hydrodynamics locally. In principle, after this time scale, you can talk about, say, the concept as entropy, entropy density, etc. But before that, you cannot have such kind of concept. Yes.
Things are quantum mechanical.
Even after that is quantum mechanical. It just after this time scale, locally at the scale of this order, you will find that the thermodynamics applies. For example, the standard notion of the entropy production will have ceased by this time. But the important point is that this time scale in the strongly coupled systems, for many studies of holographic systems, this time scale is typically very small in the absence of any weak coupling. For example, if the final state have a temperature T, then this scale is of order 1 over T. And for example, if you have a chemical potential, then more generally, then this scale is of order 1 over the equilibrium entropy density, take the appropriate power so that have the time scale. So,
another question. If you have an experimentalist living in region A,
yeah,
and they're measuring something, I don't know, anything they want.
Right.
When they make the measurement, is the
wave function of the entire system collapsing?
No, no. So,
is it a local collapse?
So that depends on the. So that depends on the your probe. The key is that if you look at the region of, say sites R, then you will only. For example, if we look at the entangled entropy of the region of sites R, let me always take this R much, much greater than this LEQ. So then you will see the entangled entropy saturate at thermal value much, much later than this time scale. And actually at the time scale of order R. So depending on the system side we are looking at. But if you only look at the system side of order LEQ, then after this time, then you will already be able to apply the local hydrodynamics, local thermodynamics, et cetera. But if you look at this global kind of non-local observables, and then take the much, much longer time, which is the key point of this investigation, and take much, much longer time scale to see the thermal behavior setting.
But how do you look at it? How did Boltzmann look at the non-local?
Yeah, yeah. So Boltzmann, if Boltzmann look at it, then he would conclude after this time scale, we can already apply thermodynamics. We can already apply hydrodynamics.
Classical.
Yeah, classical thermodynamics already works after this time scale. And that's what's happening at the weak, at the Hyperion collision, after this very short time scale, the hydrodynamics already works very beautifully.
I mean, I think you're assuming there's an infinitesimal coupling to some external observer which collapses locally in terms of, gives you a thermal equilibrium state. So, it requires, one qubit to do it, so it doesn't matter.
Sorry. Anyway, I didn't get what. Let me just go on. So we will be interested in the behavior of the entanglement entropy in this evolution process, and to see how entangled entropy evolve from the vacuum behavior into the thermal behavior. Okay, and as I mentioned, this again is related to the question of the. In quantum information, regarding how you generate entanglements between different subsystems. So again, Tadashi, I've reviewed the basic framework of calculating this holographic entropy, entangled entropy. You calculate some extremal surface with some given boundary conditions, and then magically gravity spit out the answers for the entanglement entropy. And from the Bach point of view, essentially you just work out some extremal surface which cross this shell. So the key is that this surface actually crosses this shell, and that introduces time dependence. So for the rest of the talk, I will just talk about the results, rather than talk about how you calculate this thing,
But this time dependent formula is still not proven.
Yeah, it's not proven. Yeah, but there are some very strong support for it. Yeah, so I will take it as. For example, people have proved for certain sub-situations, people have proved the strong sub-additivity condition.
So it's not like it's just wrong for some trivial reason, but we don't actually know beyond, say, like 1 plus 1 that agrees with anything?
I don't know. I think I don't want to debate about the correctness of that formula right now. I'm just using it. Yeah, that's the key. No, and this is a time-dependent situation. In the static situation, and then the surface never go to the horizon, go beyond the horizon. There's no topological condition here. The key thing is in the gravitational collapse, there's no such topological condition. That's the key. That's also the key which is responsible for this is a pure state. So precisely because there's no such topological condition, in this geometry you can show SA equal to SB. And precisely because of that.
There's no
topology. Yeah, no. So let me quickly mention a previous result in 1 plus 1 dimension, which were pioneered by Calabresi and Cardi a number of years ago. So they consider in the 1 plus 1 dimensional system, you start with a gap system, and then you tune this system to criticality. And again, this again, you do it very quickly at t equal to zero, so that generates a quench for you. So the qualitative behavior they found can be summarized in this cartoon figure, which just I drew myself. And the one key thing is that essentially there's a linear growth of time. And if you normalize your entangled entropy by the equilibrium value, then the growth have slope 1. So there's a very simple linear growth with slope 1. And then it saturates precisely. So in 1 plus 1 dimension, you just consider a single region. So I call this single region to have a size 2R. So the half of the region have size R. Then they find that the entropy saturates at the equilibrium value, so at the TS equal to R. Okay, so this is a very simple behavior which they found using some powerful conformal field theory techniques, which is rather general for a gapless system. Yeah, provide your evolution is from a gapless system, and they also provided a very simple physical explanation for these two results. Is that imagine at t equal to 0, when you quench the system, imagine the result of that quench is to create a finite density of particles at t equal to 0, at finite density of coarse particles at t equal to 0. And then they postulate, so at t equal to 0, you have finite density of coarse particles, and then afterwards, the coarse particle will just free streaming at speed of light. Okay, a free streaming at speed of light. In 1 plus 1 dimension, there's only one direction you can go. You can actually go into this direction or go into that direction. So if you have a coarse particle, one heat inside the interval and one heat outside the interval, then you have registered one unit of entanglement. Okay, it's a very naive, very simple model. It turns out that this free streaming model precisely captured these both features very well, including the slope equal to 1, and the saturation time is precisely at the radius r. Okay. And another interesting thing is that in the holographic context, one can study this kind of geometry I mentioned earlier in the 1 plus 1 dimensional context, and the people find that exact the same features are happening in the holographic systems. Even though in holographic systems, you actually excite the system very differently. In the holographic system, you turn on some sources rather than you tune the parameter of the system. So anyway, there's some differences in how one set up the system, but turns out the result to be identical in those major aspects. So in higher dimensions, of course, a study interacting series become very complicated. And as far as myself, I'm only aware of the holographic studies. And mostly by numerically studied, say this extremal surface in the gravity side, which also gets a little bit intricate. And so here is the main result people found. First is that the people always find there's a sharp saturation time. So the approaching to the equilibrium is always sharp. Okay, there's a sharp saturation time. And also people find a numerical, you can also see the non-analytic behavior when you approach the saturation. And also, so numerically to see this linear growth is no longer clear. There might be some linear,
yes. So is it, the current algorithm result you described was quenching from a massive theory?
That's right. Yeah. No. So that's one of the difference in this Cardigan and Calabresi setup is that they start with a gapped system and then they tune into criticality, and the evolution is by a gapless system. So here, in the holographic context, we just start with a gapless system, then maintaining on some source.
I understand. Yeah.
You mean the holographic context?
Forget about holography.
No, I would think the same technique apply. Their technique does not depend on these details. Their technique does not depend on the details whether the initial state is gapped or gapless.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, no. He has to consider very small size region. I think this is always the region which are much greater than thing. Maybe that I should say.
Linear satisfies there's some overlapping region of small size and small time that is
Yeah, so right, so we always want to have this a very large yeah, because we want to introduce because we want to probe the IR behavior. Yes.
So it's the so would it be because of spin chain or something if you hit some type of operator?
Yeah. You hit every side with some operator. Here we're doing spatially uniformly because because we don't want to worry about the spatial problems. Okay. Yeah. For a very short time, but uniformly over all space. Yes.
This sharp saturation time, isn't it great directly connected to the property by the solution that we showed?
Yeah, I think it's, as I'm going to say later, that this sharp saturation time is related, that this we take this delta T, this 14 time to be much smaller than any other scale.
But doesn't it also depend on the fact that there's a shell that's
yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. The shell is very thin. It's also related to that. It's a consequence of that. The more general solutions. So if you have a very spread out solution, of course you will not see that. So recently we developed some techniques so that one can actually study the many aspects of this problem analytically. So you can actually derive the analytical results for many part of the evolution of the. So the full evolution is very complicated, even with this magic of the holographic calculation. So we developed some techniques so that one can look at the extract the analytic behavior in various stages. So roughly one can separate the evolution into four stages. So first stage is very initial time, when the time is much, much smaller than this defacing time. And then there's a linear growth regime in any dimension. And there's a linear growth regime which followed this after the defacing time, then there is this a linear growth regime. And then there's, of course, there's a saturation. But before the saturation, turns out there's also a scaling regime, which is the entangled entropy, which will depend on both T and R and the size, but turns out only depend on some specific combination of them. And then there's some critical behavior near the saturation. Yes, yeah, so I will describe those results one by one. Yeah, this is a Lorentz invariant. In the vacuum, it's Lorentz invariant. But of course, when you excite the system, it's no longer. Yeah, in the vacuum, it's Lorentz invariant. Yeah, it will saturate, but the details of the saturation will be different.
But it never come back.
It will never come back. we are considering very large systems, and if you consider moderate size systems, then of course there's always Poincaré recurrence. Of course they will come back, but for the time scale we are interested in, that's too far away. Okay, so first, if you consider the time scale to be much, much smaller than this local equilibration scale, then the difference between the entangled entropy and the at zero is given by universal quadratic growth formula. And this epsilon is the energy density, and this A sigma, so we take this surface to we denote by sigma, and this A sigma is the area of the surface. And D is the number of spatial dimension, and then T squared. So this result actually is rather universal, independent of the shape. For any shape, it's the same. And independent of the series under consideration, you can take any holographic theory you want. And also independent of the nature of the Fellow equilibrium state. The only thing which depends on the Fellow equilibrium state is through the energy density. Okay, through the energy density. But once you make this assumption, maybe actually I will say it a little bit later. Anyway, so also in 1+1 dimension, there's where in 1+1 dimension, where recently this quadratic growth has also been observed in this by Hubini and Ragamani Tony in the paper recently. But now if you look at the time scale, much larger than this local equilibration scale, but still much, much smaller than the size of the system. And so the saturation, it often happens at the order of the so this is far from the saturation yet, okay? And so the R essentially defines your saturation time. And now you find that your entanglement entropy difference with the vacuum, with your initial the growth, is given by a very simple linear relation, a simple linear growth in time. And again, proportional to the area of the surface. But now the proportional constant is actually the entropy density. And it makes sense because, as I emphasized, after the local equilibration time, now you can talk about the local entropy density. Because now a global observer will see a finite equilibrium thermodynamic entropy density. And also, in a different context, there's a similar result obtained by Hartmann and Mansinder. So again, this formula is reversal, independent of the shape, and independent of the series you are considering, and independent of the nature of the equilibrium state. And the only dependence on the equilibrium state is this entropy density, which characterizes your final state, and this velocity. And this velocity, and this V, which is a dimensionless number, does depend on the nature of the equilibrium state. So if you consider the simplest situation, say your final equilibrium state, it's just a pure thermal, say with a zero chemical potential and nothing else. With no chemical potential, with no else, just describe a swashable black hole in the bark, and then you find a very funny formula for this velocity, for this V, is given by this rather funny form. And this eta is defined by this, D is the number of spatial dimension. D is the number of spatial dimension. And now if you turn on a chemical potential, and you find, so if you change your final state, and you always have this behavior, but then this V will change. But this V is independent of the shape, but that's dependent on the nature of your final state. For example, if you turn on a chemical potential, then you find the V is reduced from this value. And in particular, say if you take the chemical potential go to infinity at a fixed temperature, then this V actually approaches zero. And so if you have a conserved quantity, this makes sense because when you have a conserved quantity, you have more constraints, so the thermalization is less efficient. And then another tricky thing is that the saturation behaves like a phase transition. Yeah. Not in detail. It just if you approach that limit, you approach extremal limit. Yeah.
But it doesn't come from the geometry.
The horizon geometry does not play a very special role because this is behind the horizon. Everything is behind the horizon. Yeah.
This means that this is a theory which is Einstein gravity.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Matter fields, so that this excitation that you're putting in does not excite any of these matter fields.
You can put it in matter field. It's fine. You can put it in matter field. This result does not depend on the matter field. You can put on the matter field.
V and everything won't change.
Yeah. V will change. V will. So if you put in the final, if you put in the matter field, there will be a change in the nature of your equilibrium state, and V will depend on that.
So the universe part is that it's proportional to the area and to time.
That's right. And also the universal part is that any information about your final equilibrium state is characterized by this entropy density and this dimensionless number. This is also universal. So another thing is that saturation behaves like some kind of when the quench is sharp, then there's a sharp saturation time. And then actually you can classify this saturation behavior from the, unfortunate. because I've not reached my bottom line yet. Anyway, yeah, let me be quick. So the discontinuous, yeah, you can classify the saturation by some kind of terminology of the phase transition. And this comparison can be very sharp actually from the gravity side, in the gravity side corresponding to say the switch of branches, etc. Anyway, let me just go over very quickly. And now the details of the saturation does depend on the shape and the nature of the equilibrium state. And there's not a quite universal behavior here, because if you change the shape, then the behavior is different. But later I will tell you why changing the shape, actually the story is different here. And actually there might be still a universal story behind here. Anyway, let me just go quickly. So as I told you, at the very early time, there's two behavior. First is the quadratic growth, which proportion to energy density and T square. And then after that, you have a linear growth, which a proportion to the entropy density. After your dimension is number V and the T. Okay. So these two results.
Mm? In 1+1 dimension, the T square regime is
there. In cardiac calibration, they look at the known time behavior, so you don't see it. Yeah. Actually, this is for T much, much smaller than LEQ. So this is for T much greater than LEQ. Okay, still much smaller than the system size. So the fact that this proportion to the area, this tells you a very simple geometric picture how the entanglement grow in this system. So it tells you that it seems like the entanglement just grow from the, so at T equal to zero, you create some shock, you create a finite energy density. So what's happening is that this this quench just creates some kind of slimy wave of this entanglement and propagating from the boundary to the interior. Okay, propagating from the boundary to the interior, uniformly at every point with the same shape. So the shape is maintained at the very early time. Oh, of course, we can see the very large region. So locally, the curvature is not important. And so you see an entanglement front, and the velocity of this entanglement front increase linearly with time at the beginning. So at the beginning, there's acceleration in the motion of this front. And with a velocity increase linear with time during pre-local equalization stage. But then after you reach this local equalization, then stabilize into constant velocity, okay? So this behavior, even at first sight, seems surprising, but in hindsight, it's very natural. Because here we have a local Hamiltonian. So this shape independence and this area law in both regimes just indicates that the propagation of the entanglement is actually local. When your shape is sufficiently large and does not depend on the curvature of your just every point is the same. It's local. And this is consistent with that the evolution is controlled by local Hamiltonian. Okay. So now let me compare in this higher dimensional case with free particle streaming. So again, we assume at t equal to zero, there's a uniform quasi-particle density. And then you assume this quasi-particle density starts propagating at the speed of light at t equal to zero. And now the difference, of course, if you consider some entangled region, and now, of course, is that in the higher dimension, the quasi-particle propagation will propagate in the light cone. And the light cone will intersect. Say, for example, in the 2+1 dimensional case, this light cone will intersect with the entangled region, say, with some kind of circle. And then the region inside the circle entangled with the region outside the circle, and that's how you characterize entanglement. Okay. Again, you can use this very simple-minded free particle streaming model to calculate the evolution. So interestingly, you find that this very simple model also leads to a shape independent linear growth at a very earlier time. And this is, again, is natural. It's because just at a very earlier time, the curvature does not matter. As far as you have a local propagation, you would always expect this kind of shape independence. But the interesting thing is the velocity predicted by this free streaming model. So if you look at the one spatial dimension, 1+1 dimension, and then the velocity from the free streaming and the velocity from the CFT calculated by the cardiac calibration, and the velocity you find from gravity, they're all given by the speed of light. Okay. But in the higher dimensions, this is no longer so. In the higher dimension, this wave streaming cannot be the speed of light anymore, because now the particle can propagate in different directions. And even though each particle propagates the speed of light, because they can propagate in different directions, so this front, this entanglement front, actually propagates slower than speed of light. And so this is the formula you find, that for the free streaming, and you find that it depends on the spatial dimension and the streaming velocity of this, again, there's a sharp entanglement waveform even from free streaming model, and then you find that this velocity given by this formula. But interestingly, this formula is actually smaller. This value is smaller than the value you found from the gravity, this complicated expansion formula. So let me write down this complicated expansion formula. A gravity formula is eta minus 1, 1 half eta minus 1, divided by eta, 1 half eta. And eta is 2d divided by d minus 1, or d plus 1. OK, so both velocity is smaller than 1, but this is smaller than the gravity one. So it seems like in strongly coupled system, this entanglement tsunami propagates even faster than what can come from a free particle streaming, okay? A free particle travel at speed of light. And so this at first sight seems surprising, because you would think that the interaction, if we include interactions, the interaction of quasi particles may deter their propagation. Anyway, so that's what you find. And also, this free particle model does not capture this quadratic regime. It's because it already assumes a uniform density at the beginning. So if you, in this quasi particle model, if you take into account that the building up of this quasi particle density in this pre-local equilibration stage, it's also very easy to see a quadratic growth at the beginning. Anyway, let me also compare this result with this a conjecture or theorem in the quantum information community. So this is a result. This formula encodes many things. Require maybe a few minutes to explain where this. take a few minutes to explain the non-triviality of this formula. I think Frank is in the audience, and he will he's able to explain to you much better. Anyway, so let me not explain the detail of this formula. Just tells you this is an evolution of the entangled entropy with some Hamiltonian, and this is the modulus of the Hamiltonian, and log d is the dimension of the space of the smaller subsystem which you entangle. And there also here there are Sinner system, etc. It's complicated. Anyway, this is a very non-trivial bound, and seems like have only been proved recently, only actually a couple of weeks ago, by Frank and friends. And so these two are highly suggestive, because this is the dimension of the Hilbert space here. Here we can see the field theory, and with the local Hamiltonian. So in some sense, the A sigma encodes the number of degrees of freedom which you are entangled at the beginning, okay? Essentially the area of the surface, because the Hamiltonian only acts near the boundary at the beginning. And the entropy density times this area can be considered as the encode also the strength of the Hamiltonian. But the only difference is that here we actually obtained the result at the infinite coupling. Anyway, so there's some very suggestive business result in the spin system. And a lot of derivation is that it appears from the gravity perspective. This swash of the velocity which we found appears to actually to be upper bound if you look at different gravity geometry. And also given rather parallel with this relation, it's very tempting to speculate whether for generic field series or generic many body systems, such a linear growth, at least in relativistic systems, such a linear growth will always be bounded by this formula. You can also look at the complete entanglement. Also this entropy for also this formula in the linear regime also suggests that one can define such a growth rate of the entangled entropy, then normalized by the system area, the boundary area of the surface of the region, and the equilibrium entropy density. And then this gives you a dimensionless number, which would be a constant in the linear growth regime, but in general will be a time-dependent quantity. For example, for sigma is equal to sphere, here are several examples. So this example is for the Schwarzschild black hole as a final equilibrium state, and then with the in three space time dimension, and then you see that the entanglement entropy grows linearly, and this rate grows linearly because of this quadratic growth in the entanglement entropy, and then eventually saturate at this so this is the value of the velocity of the linear regime, and then when you approach saturation, then this will go down again, and those curves are the behavior of the chemical with chemical potential. With chemical potential, the initial growth is actually faster, but actually then the linear regime become much slower. And also this is the behavior for free streaming, and then it just goes to zero. And the linear regime is the farthest, is the biggest regime. So again, this suggests maybe one can actually put a universal upper bound on the rate. On the rate, is that this is the rate of the entanglement entropy, at least for relativistic theory. Maybe the whole, if the linear regime dominates, if the linear regime is really the fastest regime, and then this actually put also a rate on the overall growth of the entanglement entropy. So this makes sense, because in the earlier regime, you are still building up, and then when you approach the saturation, then things need to slow down. Anyway, so this is speculation at the moment. So let me just give you some numbers. Okay. Yeah, 1 second. Let me just. For d equal to 1, this is 1, but for other dimension, this is some number. So if you go to d equal to infinity, this will become 1/2. Okay. Yeah, let me just say that the saturation is the fact that the saturation is sharp is maybe related to that. the entanglement front is sharp. So once they propagate in, and then they feel, and then the curvature effect will be important. Then they feel, and then the different parts of entanglement front will feel each other. And then that will lead to various interesting behavior of the saturation, et cetera. So let me skip that. So I will conclude. Yeah, thank you. Right.
So I guess I have to ask, if you study higher curvature terms, does it make these numbers small?
No, I think psychologically we don't have that danger at the moment. Psychologically we don't have that danger at the moment because we don't know how to formulate the entanglement from higher curvature terms. Yeah, I think this is a very good question. Certainly, this is always a worry. Because if it's saturated, if that upper bound is saturated at the Einstein gravity, then if you include the higher derivative terms, it can always go either way. And so you need a very, very long trivial constraint on the higher derivative terms so that it only goes one way. And so this is a genuine worry. And so we look forward to the development of the higher derivative. Yes.
In 2D CFT, we know how to analytically compute this growth of entanglement by using Carolus cutting.
Yeah.
Is that the time we need of this coefficient?
Yeah, it's one.
Then that doesn't depend on the coupling constant.
No, that's not depend on coupling, just
but
one.
In higher dimension, you think it's
one. No, in higher dimension also does not depend on the coupling constant. For field series. I don't know. For higher dimensions, it depends on the in higher dimensions, this V might depend on the coupling constant. This V can well depend on the coupling constant. Just everything will be encoded there. Yeah, everything will be encoded there. So if you have weak coupling, this V might be small. Yes.
So is there some kind of, like, when I consider the
gravity.
Yes.
And does that correspond to some fluctuation of this wave front?
Yeah. That's a very interesting question. I don't know. It's a very interesting question to ask what is precisely responsible for the sharpness of this wavefront. So there are several things can be here. One thing is maybe it's large N, maybe because here we always do large N. But actually, it seems like large N may not be important here, because even for this free particle streaming model, you still have a sharp front, and you have a sharp saturation. So it seems like sharp front only depends on that you have a quench, and you generate this state sufficiently fast.
But in CFP3,
yes,
there is no, I mean, there are no quasi particles, so there's always a tail. It's not a front. I mean, okay, there's a front, but it's not a function front.
No, I'm not saying. I'm just saying it's in CFT. There's no quasi particles, etc.
But 1+1, there is in a sense, but not.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that this quasi particle picture already captures many qualitative behavior of the behavior, including the sharpness of the front, So the sharpness of front does not seem to depend on the details of whether this is large N or etc. And the sharpness of front it likely depends on something else. It certainly depends on that you do a quench at t equal to zero very fast.
All right, one last question.
Yes.
I think you use a model of diffusion instead of free particles.
Sorry?
Diffusion instead of free particles. Wouldn't that be a much better idea?
If you say, diffusion typically is much slower. It's controlled by the sound, etc. Diffusion much. This is all much faster than the sound.
Well, no, but entanglement's not conserved, right? I mean,
yeah, entanglement is not conserved. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying that even just consider. Yeah. Anyway,
okay.
Yeah.
So thanks to Hong.